Hello, welcome to Off Topic. This is the podcast with Susan
and Shreya.
And on this podcast, we essentially find topics that we want to rant about.
Get off our chests.
Yeah, and then we just go off on lovely tangents.
Multiple tangents about multiple things. Soaps, celebrities, a lot of YouTubers.
A lot of YouTube.
But the big issues that are getting to us.
Yeah. The name chose us, I feel like. Yeah. We recorded a couple of episodes and then realised that we go off topic, which is why we chose the name.
Hope you enjoy this episode on colourism and skin bleaching. It's an interesting one for both of us and our two different perspectives on it.
Yeah, we also discuss Sadiq Khan.
Oh, as we always do.
As we
can't get through a conversation without him.
I think our first three episodes, he's heavily featured.
Yeah.
So yeah, enjoy. Headlines. Basically, I wanted to talk about Azealia Banks, who's quite controversial for many reasons. But yeah, she was really into, she's really pro skin bleaching.
Yeah.
I saw an interview she did where she was basically saying that it's like getting your skin bleached is the same as having a nose job or, I don't know, getting a weave. I think she said getting a weave.
Right.
Yeah. So I just wanted your thoughts on that. Can we really judge? Firstly, where do you stand on skin bleaching?
Mm-hmm.
Just to get that out of the way.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, can we really judge people? Is it just a way of changing up your look? Because I think skin, I looked into this and I think skin bleaching is reversible.
Okay.
So if you don't like do it too much, once in a while. So yeah, where do you stand on it?
I mean, me personally, I've never really thought about it for myself, but I know that other people think that it's really important to be fair. For example, if you look at girls in India, young girls getting married or girls that watch a lot of films, the whole fair and beautiful aesthetic is really, really big there. There's even a brand called Fair and Lovely.
And we have Dark and Lovely. So
oh,
that's,
really?
That's best.
There's one called Fair and Lovely, and it's fronted by like the, he's basically like the Brad Pitt of Bollywood.
Yeah.
Shah Rukh Khan.
Oh, I know that.
He's
is.
On all the posters, Fair and Lovely, and it, you get a lovely.
is he that fair?
He's not even that fair.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that they're photoshopped.
Oh.
But I know that girls before their weddings will be like, oh, I'll have a lightening session, the same way that a girl over here might get a tan, a spray tan. So I guess in that sense, if someone is wanting to get a spray tan on a Friday night, maybe a girl that wanted to lighten her skin would be in her rights to bleach her skin. But for me, with the whole Azealia Banks thing, you've got to look at her, the other things that she says.
Like, she's so problematic.
I know. I mean, 212, it's a fantastic song in terms of the tune, right? Listen to the words.
I actually haven't.
Listen to the words.
I need to listen.
You're going to get a shocking surprise.
What does he...
The C word about 50 times. Every other word.
I noticed.
And the way that she acts in general on social media.
She's quite erratic and
erratic.
I feel like she tries to provoke people.
Calling out young women for saying certain things that criticise her. I don't know how much I'd listen to her in terms of her opinions on skin bleaching, but I think it is a difficult one of where do you cross the line? Because if you're saying that skin bleaching is a normal thing, is it going to get to a point where young black women or young Indian women per se, you know, grow up thinking, you know, that's the done thing and I must from age 14, 15 start lightening?
I agree, because I think I'm not against like cosmetic surgery or putting on makeup, like, but I think what it comes down to is the reasoning. I don't think women of colour actually who choose to skin bleach, I think it's so much deeper than just wanting a different look.
Yeah.
It does. I think it boils down to the fact that being lighter is seen as more beautiful.
More attractive,
Yeah, so people just choose to do that.
And we've seen it a lot recently. I don't know if you've seen the stuff about Beyoncé's sister.
Great album.
And what Lupita Nyong'o,
yeah,
them having their hair edited out of magazine covers.
I saw that.
And that is the same thing, is that...
A magazine.
It was, I think it was a British...
It might have been Glamour.
It was a British magazine for Lupita, and actually they were both British magazines. And they got heavily criticised because...
They'd cut out the natural hair.
She
had like a situation.
Like a circular braid.
It
above
was amazing.
Her, yeah, like a halo.
Yeah.
And
with that, I thought, okay, maybe they couldn't fit it in.
Yeah.
But then with Lupita's, I was like, okay, that
you
was
definitely
edited.
Just cleaned up her hair because you didn't like it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is you, to be beautiful and to have afro hair, the... what these magazines are saying is you must either be shaved bald and like Alec Werk or Lupita Nyong'o, or it should be long and sleek and beautiful Beyonce.
Yeah.
So there's
no
in between.
Like, middle.
And but that's what it boils down to, is representation. I think, you know, if you don't have women who are in the public eye or prominent in their fields who look like you, then there
you're gonna
is,
think
yeah
that you need to change up your look to be more
exactly.
attractive or to be more accepted.
And for some people it's kind of a jokey topic. I know that one of my mum's friends, who she's Indian, and she feels that she doesn't want to tan her arms at all, so when she's driving she puts a scarf over her arms while she drives. And she, when she's on holiday, she'll put a hat over her face while she's in the sun, because she does not want to tan at all. Because with Indian people, I think it goes back to caste system values.
Yeah.
Of the higher the caste, the lighter the skin. Mm. And the lower the caste, the darker you are. And people still kind of make jokey assumptions now.
I think it's similar in the black community.
Yeah.
People do find... especially like mixed race people, people find them more attractive.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's seen as more of the ideal. And I think that that's why, because skin bleaching was a thing in Ghana.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was banned last year.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because it's banned there and it's not banned in the UK. I think it comes down to, it's just being lighter is just more idealized.
Yeah. And it's what you see is the, you know, in whichever country, 100 sexiest women in whatever magazine in India.
Mm.
I don't think there's any of them that are a darker skin tone. Most of them are the fairest. And I imagine bleached skinned women. And it's Bollywood actresses, it's TV presenters, it's dancers, and it doesn't feel like there's anybody else to fill that space. Obviously, not many young girls are going to look at 100 sexiest women and think, I want to look like them.
Yeah.
But it's what diffuses into your sphere and your mind that you think, oh, that's maybe how I should look. And I think, I don't know, I guess it's quite lucky here that the Indian women that I see on TV in newspapers aren't all the same.
Yeah.
It's so nice
That's
to see.
That's so important as well.
And it's so nice to see, like, Indian women with short, highlighted hair and not all the same, because I think there was so long that Indian women were just, like, long, dark, straggly, horrible hair and... And it was that kind of horrible stereotype in British soaps and dramas, and they were the annoying neighbour, and it's nice to see them in different places, whether that's on TV, in newspapers, whatever. But I think it's difficult to judge the whole bleaching argument depending on their motives for it, because if it's... It's like makeup, isn't it?
Yeah.
I really love makeup because I enjoy the process of putting it on.
Yeah,
I think it's... I think
there's
it's
nothing
relaxing.
Wrong with that.
Yeah. Because...
And I wouldn't judge people for wearing, like, too much or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I think most people wear makeup.
Yeah.
might be a generalization, but I do think that most people wear makeup because they enjoy it.
In some way, yeah.
And I think also when you have so many people who, like you were saying, that a lot of Indian women in the 100 sexiest women list were lighter, it just means that other women don't have that, or other people don't have their needs like attended to. I'm sort of thinking of makeup.
Yeah.
Because until very recently, there weren't many like foundation shades for women of colour.
Yeah.
Really recently. And it actually like shocks me when I think about it. Like when I started, so I started wearing makeup when I was like 16.
Yeah.
17. And I immediately knew that I couldn't wear drugstore makeup. So like my friends were obviously where like would just go to Boots and
£10,
get it. And I literally had to spend £30 on my first. Don't regret it, because Lancome is amazing.
Yeah.
but the fact that you're just immediately off, pushed aside because people don't see anyone like dark. Like, it literally always stops at like caramel.
Yeah.
And it's just like there's no one darker
medium
than caramel.
Medium tan.
Yeah. espresso, but it's like non espresso.
My shade in L'Oreal is honey.
That's okay.
But it's too dark for me. Can you believe that? I find it weird that my shade actually is the same shade as I saw on Instagram a white beauty editor was wearing my same shade of Armani foundation.
Really?
Very, very strange. But I had a similar problem. Like, when I first started wearing makeup, I had to get a Chanel foundation, spend £34 on it.
And it's crazy, thinking back, because it was, like, my first job. I spent so much of my salary on a foundation, because I was like, how else am I going to get foundation?
And the amount of research that goes into finding out what shade you would be. Like, have you seen the makeup brand Glossier now?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my word. Okay, so I obviously really like using makeup and experimenting, but I just know that it's not for me.
Yeah. Because well, have you seen the shade dark?
The shade dark is like, it's pretty, I think a lot of
I think it might be too light for me.
Yeah, literally. I think quite a few olive-skinned white people would find that it was too light.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's difficult when these new brands, these new millennial brands are starting and thinking, we'll start with light, medium and dark and go from there.
Yeah.
Because, we've got the important people done.
And it's really painful as well when, so obviously Fenty Beauty came out and sold out, and then all the brands started making darker colours.
Yeah.
And obviously great, because now I wear L'Oreal and I'm not going back. £10 foundation is amazing.
Amazing.
But but it still really hurts that it's clearly just for a marketing campaign. They realise that women of colour buy makeup.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
It was that one point where everyone was like, 40 shades, Fenty Beauty.
Yeah, literally.
And all of the other brands are like, oh my God, 40 shades. But to be fair to L'Oreal, for all of their... for all the bad press that they get about animal testing and things like that, I think what they did with True Match was pretty big for its time.
Yeah, definitely. It was the first like drugstore. I want to say it was the first drugstore.
Yeah,
Maybelline followed, but it was the first.
First drugstore that had like, I don't know, 20 shades plus.
Yeah, which is amazing, because for the first time you can actually go into the drugstore. And it was the first one that also had, because what I would find as well, which is also frustrating, I don't know if you had this as well, but even when you go and get your makeup, when you go and get your foundation matched, they just assume that you're like, oh, they're like, oh, we have a brown shade, I'll be right back,
this is for you.
And then you're like, this is really red toned or like really yellow, like they don't really consider that.
I always end up looking absolutely tangoed, orange as hell.
Because they just assume.
Yeah.
And it's really annoying.
And I'm just like, I'll think about it. I'll just have a look in the daylight. I hate it.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, I'm leaving.
Goodbye. I've had that with MAC foundations as well.
I hate MAC foundations.
Okay, I'm not alone.
I love MAC.
I love
but
their powder and their lipstick.
I can't do the foundations. They make my skin go...
They're all really red-toned, and it's really frustrating.
I just think they make me break out.
Yeah, they're
except
really heavy.
For one, face and body doesn't make me break out.
That's
the
cellulitis,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But the rest of them I can't do. But what I would recommend, Giorgio Armani, Luminous Silk.
I need to try that.
Fantastic.
But then
It's £40.
Yeah, that's my thing, because I'm always like, I will not spend more than £32. It was £30, and I found a £32.
I have heard that the Longcom one is very good.
It is really good. I need to try them again, because what happened was I realised, I don't know, it got to a point where I was like, oh, it might be a bit too warm.
Yeah.
And I've been using this L'Oreal one. It's so good.
It's so good, isn't
and
it?
I felt so bad, because when the whole Monroe Bergdorf thing happened, everyone was like, we need to boycott L'Oreal. And I was like, I can't afford to boycott L'Oreal right now.
So what happened in the end with that? Because I followed a little bit of it.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, what she actually said. What did she actually say?
She basically said that systemic, is that the word?
Yeah.
Systemic racism exists. That was basically what she said.
Wow, okay.
So she said that there is racism. Racism exists in, like, our institutions.
Yeah.
We're, like, institutionally racist.
Yeah.
That's what she said, and that's what got people upset. And she was basically saying that there is an unconscious bias when it comes to racism, and that's what got people really upset, because they were like, I'm not racist.
Yeah.
And she was like, it's not your fault.
It's,
like,
not your
don't
fault.
Don't be defensive.
Yeah.
I actually, that's what she said.
Yeah, I read something quite interesting the other day, and it was
I thought
actually,
we all knew.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm really shocked that no one knew this.
Yeah. But it's difficult for people to understand when they don't think that they are racist, that they are complicit.
Yeah.
So okay. I saw a video of some guy hurling abuse at a Chinese man in America on a tram in, I think it was Fremont, California. And the carriage is pretty empty, but he's hurling abuse. He's like getting his hands in his face. It's getting quite aggressive, and nobody says anything. People start getting up and walking away, so they're giving this guy who's hurling the abuse out dirty looks, so they're obviously not impressed.
Yeah,
but they're walking away, and the problem is that they will say, oh, well, I'm not a racist, but you're not doing anything to stop it. You're getting yourself out of the way
the situation, yeah.
But nobody speaking up is not going to change anything.
Exactly.
And that is part of the problem, that I'm not saying that, you know, the country is systematically racist in every way. No way. But there
are... Do
you not
think so?
Well,
I think that our...
Institutions, police force...
Yeah. Education system. I think...
Okay. I don't know, because I haven't experienced it.
I think what it comes down to with... when I think of universities, it's just little things like the fact that most Russell Group universities are white.
Yeah.
Even when you look at, I was watching this documentary about Oxford and Cambridge, and basically what happens, and actually, because I know people who have applied to Oxford and Cambridge, and the thing is that I think they put a lot of weight on the interview. And so, for example, if you want to study English, a lot of it is a lot of the interview questions will be like more about how culturally aware you are.
Yeah.
So you could have like A star grades, but if you aren't that, I don't know how to describe
yeah,
this.
So they are looking for someone with that
with a certain background.
Yeah.
When it comes to like where you've grown up, not even necessarily not your race, I'm just talking about like a certain background, and it just so happens that there are more middle class white people in this
that
country.
Fit that. Oh, right.
And because the whole like exam and just everything you have to do just to get that offer,
yeah,
is more favored towards those people, you end up with a university that only has like 10 black students coming in a year.
Wow.
I think that was Cambridge or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one college, isn't there? I don't know if it was Oxford or Cambridge, but it's Mansfield College that is the vast majority state school students. So they are pushing that shift from private to state, but it feels like the racial shift should have happened years ago, because it felt like it was happening. You'd see these things in the news of young black women and black men, Asian women, but I think that their practices, the way that they run their JCRs, their colleges, maybe don't lend themselves to someone that's come from a state school background.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really well put.
So, yeah. The way that they run their university, the things that they expect of people, the things that are normal there. Like, I even found the whole JCR thing weird here, but yeah. I found that most
people... What does JCR even stand
for? Junior Common Room. So, when I was in...
Never used it.
When I was in first year, it was... That was your place that you... just preed in or sat and watched TV. That was your JCR. But when you were electing people as your committee, they were your JCR president or JCR. Okay. So it was, everything was centered around being part of this JCR community, I think.
I would
say from what I know, that is favored towards a certain background. Completely agree with you. But in general, from my experiences, I wouldn't say that I know enough about systemic racism in education, but from what I have seen and heard about Stop and Search, then there's evidence to show that
it's
people of colour that are targeted.
No, definitely, and men. I don't even think, and this is what Monroe. I could never say her. I'm just gonna say Monroe. Okay, I don't know her. That's just what I'm calling her. She was basically saying that it's unconscious. Mm. I don't think that all policemen just like see guy in a hoodie and just decide they're going to stop them because they're black. But it's just an unconscious bias that you just think that they are more likely to like commit a crime.
Yeah.
And so you're more likely to stop them. And that's basically what she was saying. And everyone was really upset about it.
Mm.
I don't really understand why she was fired, because basically L'Oreal was saying that she was fired because what she said didn't align
with their values of inclusion and whatever,
which I don't even understand why wires got crossed.
But who was that to please? Like, who were they trying to please?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I was going to say that the vast majority of their customers would be like young professional women, maybe, I don't know, 16 to 30.
Yeah.
But then again, they own so many brands that they have this brand to preserve and protect. Yeah.
I think they just didn't want controversy.
Yeah, they wanted to cut it all off at the source, but I don't think whoever made that decision really
understood what she said.
And I think that's
and it was such an opportunity that was just like silenced. Yeah. Like, let's just get rid of her.
Such a big opportunity, because that's what the whole campaign was about, was saying, you know, there's 30 different people with completely different colours and
completely different backgrounds. Like, this was the first trans model that they had.
Yeah, they had a trans model. They weren't all models. I think some of them were influencers, makeup artists. They had
singers, presenters. Like, it was such an opportunity to have a wider conversation. And instead, they silenced her because they basically thought that she was being racist towards white people.
Yeah.
Which is not possible. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was really disappointed.
So was I.
Still by the foundation.
No, yeah.
I'm such a traitor.
I would also quite like a job with them.
Hire me, please.
If you could reopen the grad scheme, I would very much enjoy that.
Oh my god. Yeah. No, but okay, so do you think that we then have a right to ban skin bleaching? So for example, skin bleaching, you can find products in the UK currently. I know a shop that sells them, so you can find them. Do we have a right to say how people go about?
I
think we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it comes down to also you don't know if there are younger people whose parents are bleaching their skin, because do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they don't have like the full, obviously we're over 18, we don't live at home, so we can like choose.
Yeah.
But it's not always a choice for everyone.
Yeah.
We were talking about this last time. Basically about, do you know what relaxers are?
Yeah.
So a lot of young people had their hair relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of young black women, girls, had their hair relaxed. Well, a lot of black girls I know. And it was like their mums who decided to relax their hair.
Oh, right.
So, and relaxing is not like, it's a lot of chemicals. There's a great documentary with Chris Rock. It's like really, it's not
with
safe.
Chris Rock?
Yeah, Chris Rock did this documentary called Good Hair. It's so funny.
Okay.
It's on Netflix. You should watch it.
Yeah.
But he takes the chemical from the relaxer
mm-hmm.
and they put it in like water and then they put like a Coke can in it
uh-huh.
and they leave it over time and the Coke can like disappears after 3 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Literally. So it's not, I don't want to judge people who relax.
Yeah.
But
have you ever done it in the past?
Yeah. So I did it when I was younger.
Yeah.
And my mum did it for me, but I did ask her to do it.
Okay.
So, and also she never left it in for, so when you put in relaxer, you have to wait for it to sort of start to burn. Yeah. And then wash it out. And then that's how you know your hair's like truly straightened.
Oh.
So my mum never left it in for that long. So my hair would be relaxed for, I kid you not, like 2 weeks. And then it would start to go back to it. She never relaxed it for that long.
Yeah.
And yeah, so even then I was 8. Like, I don't know if, no, I was probably 10 when I got my hair relaxed. I don't know if it was really a choice or if it was more of just, I went to an all white school.
Oh, really?
I was literally the only person of color in my school.
Yeah.
Apart from my brother. I don't know if it was more of wanting to fit in.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I really had a choice. So I don't know if people are doing that with skin bleaching and whether parents, and if they are, then I think we have,
yeah,
I think we should ban them then, because
they're growing up and that is a norm and it's something that mum has brought into the house.
Yeah.
And she does it, so I may as well do it as
which
well,
which is really problematic.
Yeah. So I guess that the big reason that you might ban it is what's inside it. Are these chemicals going to actually damage your skin permanently? Because I know that a lot of chemicals in toners, like you were saying to me earlier on,
yeah,
that some toners have these strange astringent chemicals that are gonna lighten your skin or gonna
harm. And they'll say it in a really weird way, yeah, like you have to be woke, guys.
Yeah.
Literally, because I picked up this toner that was meant to be for women of color.
Oh.
And it was, I can't remember how it worded it, but it was talking about like correcting hyperpigmentation by,
yeah,
lightening your skin.
Yeah.
It's like, nope, not for me. But
yeah,
that's the thing. A lot of people say that they're going to, they're going to use like skin bleaching to correct hyperpigmentation.
Pigmentation, yeah.
That's a big excuse, in my opinion, that people use.
Yeah, because for me, I know that for like acne scarring or pigmentation issues that I use a glycolic acid toner, but
that's not the same.
Yeah, it's not nowhere near the same. But we, even with that, you get advice, quite stern advice, use an SPF over the top because otherwise you will get UV damage on your face.
Okay.
So I imagine with skin bleaching that's even worse if you're not instructed to actually protect yourself afterwards. How many doors is that going to open to skin problems in terms of like skin cancer? Or I think you should know what is inside that first.
Definitely.
And that would be my biggest issue with my biggest reason for banning it. But then if we go back to the whole mum's bringing it into the house argument, I remember when I was younger my mum used to have this like hair bleaching cream to put on like the, you know, the sides of your face where you get those little hairs.
Okay.
And maybe on your upper lip if you need it.
Yeah.
I prefer to go to my threading lady. And that was normal. And after a while I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. And so maybe I wouldn't have wanted to do that if
it's hard to know.
If my mum hadn't done that. So
what we're really influenced by.
Exactly.
Because I've started to really think about that since coming to uni.
Yeah, because one of my friends, she said that when she was at school, the reason that she started waxing her upper lip was because a boy sitting next to her said, "Oh, you've got a moustache." Yeah, and she still remembers it so clearly to this day.
That's, kids are so mean.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
Aren't they? But the thing is, when you look back, you're like, oh, I was mean as well.
Yeah, I probably was.
So you can't... can't really judge them, can you? I remember there was one boy, for some reason, we just didn't want to sit next to him. I don't know why.
Really?
No one wanted to sit next to him.
I don't think I was that mean, because I was, like, the one picked. Yeah. Oh, that's so mean.
Yeah, I know. In primary school, that happened.
Where I feel like people were really nice in primary school. And then I went to, like, secondary school.
Yeah.
And everyone got really bitchy.
Well, I went to an all-girls school for secondary. But unlike most other people, I loved it.
Did you?
I loved it. It was great. I would do it all again.
I always wanted to go to an all-girls school.
Yeah.
I read Mallory Towers. I don't know if anyone knows
that. I don't know what that is.
Enid Blyton.
Okay.
You're missing out. Probably too late. It's, like, aimed at, like, 8-year-olds.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I really want... My mum went to an all-girls school.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to go to one.
No, I think, you know, there was obviously some arguing and some bitchiness. But I think girls' schools get quite a bad rap. And overall, it built a sense of kind of...
sisterhood.
Yeah, no, it sounds really cringeworthy, but honestly, I value my girlfriends from school so much. And I think you stopped caring about what people thought. Like, obviously, there were stupid trends that went across the year group. Everyone dyed their hair black at one point. Everyone dyed their hair red. Everyone did this, that. People come in with their fake tan on Friday. But it was good fun.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there were some difficult years, you know, Year 8, people went a bit crazy.
Year 8 and 9.
But by year 11, you know who you liked, you know who you don't really get on with, and people just got on with things and actually, like, had a good time.
That's really, yeah. And that's a really good point about valuing your girlfriends, because I think I don't know if it was just me, but I thought it was like, really uncool. It was seen as really cool if you had, like, guy friends.
Mm.
And do you know what I mean? And
right.
it's so weird. Because you need, I think all girls need, like, good female friends.
Yeah, this might sound like, you know, such a horrible, harsh thing to say. But if I meet girls who are like, yeah, I don't like being friends with girls.
I think you're a bitch.
I think, why not? Why would you not?
Yeah.
There's absolutely no reason that you shouldn't get on with anyone. Like, why should you discriminate? Oh, I'm not going to get on with girls. I'm not going to get on with boys. But... Obviously, I went to a girls' school, so the boys that we knew were just, you know, the boys at the other school that used to meet at parties. They weren't very exciting.
Right, yeah.
No, not very exciting at all. But some of those girls who went to school with me, and for those, 7 years that I was there,
yeah,
are going off and doing really interesting things now. And it's so nice to see that, oh, this person's all the way in... She's in Miami. She's being a music producer. I don't know if she is a music producer, but she's trying to get into that. There's girls who've done drama school and are looking to get into theatre. There's girls who have gone to a really interesting place on their year abroad just now. Lots of them have just graduated, doing masters. And obviously, you know, that's what every alumni of a school does.
Yeah.
But it's so nice to see all of these girls from
doing well.
A state school... London suburb, just doing very well.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to see lots of different types of people around you. And you said that you were the only person of colour in your whole school.
Which had loads of problems.
Which I can imagine would be really difficult.
It was. It just manifested itself in really unhealthy ways.
Really?
Until, like, university. No, seriously. I think because it's really important to have people... Yeah, if you just look like you, you don't realise how much of a difference that makes.
Because
then you just see yourself as an outsider all the time.
Yeah.
And you're constantly trying to fit in, but you can't.
Yeah.
Because the way you're trying to is essentially, like, be white, which isn't, like, going to happen.
And
seriously.
For me, I found that I wasn't necessarily friends with other Indian girls at school.
Yeah.
But
they were there.
Yeah, they were there. Mm. And you could see... You could see them in other social groups and whatever, and they were fine. But it wasn't so much that I wanted to stick to those people, but it's just, what would life be if everybody was all the same, you know? We had not a hymn, a nice little tune that we used to sing in our school assemblies.
Go
this
on.
Is primary school.
Okay.
But it was basically like, if we all looked the same, spoke the same language... All ate the same and had the same name. And it was basically saying, like, if you ate the same sandwich at school, if everyone ate the same sandwich, wouldn't it be a shame? Everyone would be so boring if they were all the same. Because there's nothing to talk about. So... I've gone massively off topic there.
No, I love that.
I really enjoyed that song. It was cool. But yeah, again, goes back to representation.
Yeah.
And I wrote an essay about this last week.
Did you?
Well, in,
what for?
For... immigration and citizenship.
Oh, right.
A level 3 module run by the great Dr. Helen Williams. I wrote about how race actually affects national identity.
That's such a good question.
You could use that for your dissertation.
Okay, so she won't be listening, so it's fine.
Yeah.
I love how I was scared she was going to listen. So I tried to argued my first dissertation module that people of colour don't like find it more difficult to find work. I think my supervisor didn't really see that race really impacts anything,
yeah,
like employment. So I don't know how she'd find that. But
the whole idea of the in group and the out group. Well, I'll give you the sources that we're talking about in groups and out groups because. One of them was, I think, something about, like, realistic group conflict theory that basically says if the in-group thinks that the out-group poses some sort of threat, then it becomes a little bit like a matrix in terms of if you did A-level economics and they had the game theory matrix. Yeah. Yeah. So if they see that another say, ethnic group or the out-group are threatening their dominance, instead of sharing that dominance in the social sphere, in institutions, they look to cut off opportunity so that those resources, be that economically or socially, aren't shared.
Oh.
It's very interesting.
That's really interesting. So, final segment. What I'm going to do is read out a quote and I'm going to give you 3 options and you just have to guess who said it.
Okay.
Who said that?
Who said that?
Who said that? Who said that?
The quote is, "She's the perfect mixture of mixed race, sort of posh Notting Hill royalty."
Okay.
Was it A, Simon Cowell, B, Alexandra Shulman, or C... Sorry, it was C, June Sarpong.
Do I know who this is about?
I feel like the context give it
away. That's fine.
Yeah, it will.
I'm gonna go... I think that's something Alexandra Shulman would say.
Yeah! Well done! Yeah. I didn't know that she would say something like this.
No? Okay. Because, you know, she was the editor of British Vogue for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until towards the end of her tenure that problems started to kind of be highlighted in the media. I don't know if you saw that Inside Vogue documentary.
No.
But it didn't show her to be...
She's been really shady towards...
It didn't show anything... Well, the part that I saw didn't show anything that showed her to be racially insensitive or racist or whatever. But the part that I saw was about the... I don't know if it was an anniversary issue, a big anniversary. I can't remember how many years, but they were meant to have a cover with Rihanna on the front or something, or Kate Moss. But basically they showed the documentary team, like, this is what our cover's going to be. This is what our cover's going to be. Then from nowhere, she comes out with this Kate Middleton cover. And apparently the people working on this documentary were like, it was really quite weird that we'd come in to film her and she'd be like, yeah, Inside Vogue, you can have all access. And then she hid one of the biggest secrets of the last 2 years of her being there.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting, the debate that's happening now with Edward Enninful's new Vogue.
Yeah, I love it.
Did you watch the interview between Sadiq Khan and Naomi Campbell?
No.
It was an interesting watch.
Sadiq Khan is one of my favourite people.
Same. And
he's top 10.
I struggle with people's criticisms of him, you know, blaming him for things that he has no control over. I had one person say to me last year, after the mayoral election, he said to me, oh, did you vote in the mayoral election? Because I was at uni at the time. And I was like, yeah, I did a postal vote. Mm. And he said, oh, who did you vote for? And I was like, well, one, I don't need to tell you, but I'm going to tell you because I don't care. Vote for Sadiq Khan. He went, is it because he's Asian?
Really?
Yeah.
As if the people think that.
Think that I would vote for him just because he's Asian.
Yeah, a lot of people think that, or that like we vote for black politicians because we're
just
black.
But yeah. No. I mean, I don't think that many people would vote for like David Lammy just because he's black. I think what he tries to do is so good in what is he, Hackney? No, Tottenham. He's Tottenham. Yeah. Hackney's Diane Abbott.
Yeah.
In Tottenham is great, and he's trying to bring them back together after 6 years down the line. But he is not the most eloquent politician in the world, and he ran for Labour's London candidate, and he lost.
Yeah.
And that's fine, and I think most black people would agree with that. Yeah. Like, earlier on, I was back in Tessa Jowell.
Okay.
And then I realised, actually, you know, Sadiq's got some good things to say, not because he's Asian.
That's so... doesn't even surprise me, all know, like, five people who would say that.
Exactly. Yeah. And this came from an Asian person themselves.
Okay, that I can't explain.
He said that, but he was a conservative supporting Asian, so I think he might have...
Interesting.
Very interesting.
No, I was a black Tory.
He's a very, very privileged Asian, I thought it was interesting that, but... go back to the interview.
Yeah.
He seemed really excited about the whole New Vogue, more opportunities for models who aren't the set of Insta girls or the supermodels.
Exactly. So she's talking about Adwoa again.
Adwoa.
She's Ghanaian. I really should know her name.
I should know.
Like, I'm a fan. I follow her on Insta.
Very
she's
beautiful
great.
Woman.
Yeah. She said that she offered her the cover. I don't believe her. She offered her the cover and she said no.
She said that who offered?
Sorry, Alexandra Shulman said that she had offered Adwoa the cover.
Oh, really? And she had said no to Alexandra because of... Oh, wow. And did she say that about her, this quote?
Yeah, so she was talking about her.
Since the cover's come out
since
or before?
Since the cover's come out.
Which, she's come out talking about it now.
Yeah, really, I find this quote... really problematic.
Have you seen the very bitter interview that she gave, basically saying...
What,
oh,
with The Guardian?
Is that the one where she was talking about, Edward's got lots of... well,
celebrity friends.
Yeah, all of the next generation of magazine editors will be those with lots of Instagram followers.
She needs to quietly retire. Like, I'm sorry.
Have you seen the reaction to the new editor of US... It's either... Vanity Fair or Harper's Bazaar? I think it's Vanity Fair. Her name is Radhika Jones. So she's...
Wait.
American. She's...
Wait, Quincy Jones is...
No, that's Rashida.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, not her. Yeah. I don't know. She may be related. I don't know. But her name is Radhika Jones, and she is American, but with Indian background.
Yeah.
And really intelligent, has studied at like Ivy League colleges, all of that. And there was an article about her the other day saying that whichever magazine it is, it's one of the Condé Nast publications.
Okay.
So as Anna Wintour heads up Vogue and Condé Nast as a whole, she'd had an office with, she'd had an interview with her. Or a meeting after she got the job, and she'd walked in some sort of printed tights with wolves on them or something.
Yeah.
And apparently everyone was disgusted by it, and it got written in Women's Wear Daily about the big uproar.
That's really
not funny. About her. It was reporting on the perceptions in the Condé Nast office towards this new woman. And basically highlighting... I thought it was an interesting fact. Some people were saying, why report this? But I thought it was quite interesting to actually hear, you know, if it's a young girl who's going to fashion shows and wearing silly clothes, that's fine. That's fashion.
Yeah.
But if it's an educated woman who wants to wear some funky tights, oh, that's not all right anymore.
That's... I didn't think about it like that.
Well, one yeah. educated Asian woman. I don't know, but it's...
No, that's true.
It's so nice to see an Indian woman born in America, studying there, getting to her standing in the publishing industry,
yeah.
getting to become editor of
Good
something
for
like
her.
That. Edward Enninful, the same thing. He moved to London very young age.
Yeah.
So I think Alexandra Shulman's interview in The Guardian was a little bit, well, not a little bit, very problematic,
yeah.
because it was basically like, you know, we should keep the old guard of all the old middle class white women at the top.
Yeah, that's basically it. And this was from The Guardian interview.
Mm.
And no, I just picked up on it because it sort of, again, I just think it highlights how people
fetishize to make something a fetish. Yeah.
Fetishize. Okay, yeah. Yeah. About mixed race women, and it just made me feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
When I read it. But yeah. I think colorism I think it seeps into all aspects.
Yeah. I know.
There was that documentary about it was saying, what was it called? It was something about like how dating is white now. Basically.
Dating is white.
Yeah,
now.
it was on Channel 4. Oh, I can't remember the title. It had a pretty provocative title.
Dating is white.
It was about
I don't know if this is quite so relevant, but did you see the program on a Channel 4? I think it was at some point in September. About a white British woman in Manchester or the surrounding areas dressing up as a Muslim woman to see what treatment she would get. I can't remember what it was called. I think it was like My Week as a Muslim.
That's okay. I don't know. What did you think of it?
I didn't watch all of it. I read
really
a lot
like
about
her.
It because I didn't know how I was going to feel about it. Maybe I should, but it was basically showing she herself was a little bit hostile towards immigration and Muslims.
What, she herself?
This woman who volunteered to do it. This is what I don't understand.
That's what I don't like.
People signing up for these shows are like, well, I
myself am internally racist.
I myself don't really like Muslim people.
So now I'm going to dress... That's
yeah,
that's
it was
not right.
Very weird. And they had... So they'd given her a hijab and a full... and a full face of kind of darker foundation so that she looked a bit more tanned. But
okay, that brings me to the point. But yeah, go on.
And black eyeliner. They'd given her like a different shaped nose.
Oh my word.
And it was to show her what life is like as a Muslim woman. But then...
You're doing the most for a documentary.
The filming coincided with the Manchester bombing in May. And so in the days afterwards, she was walking in the street and people were saying, it's your fault, your people did this, you should get out. And she was having this abuse hurled at her and they didn't realise she was a white woman and she was feeling it. But I thought, why are we following a white woman dressing up as a Muslim?
Why
don't
you
just
follow
a real
Muslim?
Follow a real Muslim, because that's not a costume, that's there every day.
And why are you turning... Why are you turning their faith into a costume?
Yeah.
That's really... That's not right.
Yeah.
And also, okay, are you offended by blackface?
Well, yes, because it's always done in a way that is pejorative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think also people don't really understand the history behind blackface. People don't really get it.
Exactly. I don't know enough about it, but
yeah.
I've heard and I've seen certain clips of like black and white TV.
Mm.
Even in those days, people would take part in comedy sketches and that would be part of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, again, people just don't understand the history and the connotations behind it. But then again, there's a new wave of this whole costumes that are not so tasteful. You know, the Caitlyn Jenner costumes.
That was disgusting.
Yeah.
And then you have like more nuances with like, so did you see Moana?
I've not seen it yet.
So good. It's just so pure. So obviously after Moana came out, that always happens, isn't it? Like, they bring out costumes. And then people started saying, should white kids really be dressing up as Moana? Like, is that right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I personally don't think so. But it's such a good film. It's such a good film. The documentary was called Is Love Racist? Watch it. It's good. It was basically saying that deep down, most preferences are towards, like, white women when men are choosing women to date.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what it comes down to. There was this guy who was like, I would never date a black woman, but I would definitely sleep with her.
Oh god.
Like, it was so, but I talked to people who were like, that's not offensive.
Yeah,
which is crazy.
But then again, you ignore it, don't you, when your friends are like, you know, I would definitely sleep with a black man.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Just to see if I would ever go back, you know, whole phrase, once you go black, you never go back. Yeah. And one of my friends ages ago was saying that.
Really?
Yeah, after, I can't remember when it was, but in first year it was like, yeah, I would like to find out. And I was like, okay. That's what. But then, is it racist when some people have what they call a type?
I don't think it's. Of course, it's. You're just attracted to what you're attracted to. But I think it's acknowledging what influences what you're attracted to.
It's acknowledging.
Also, it's if you. Sorry, I cut you off there.
Yeah,
but
no,
just really
fine.
Quickly. No, it's if you. It's sort of acknowledged, because some people are like, I just do not date, for example, black women.
Yeah.
And my whole thing is, firstly, not all black women look the same.
Yeah.
You don't know. Obviously, we all, even if you think that you, say, like, for example, I didn't find black men attractive.
Yeah.
False. like, that's not to say, you obviously, everyone has, like, there is a black man that you would find attractive. So to say that you just don't date them. I feel like that is kind of racist. Yeah.
See, my friends know that I'm picky. So
yeah,
I always say to them, you know, you put an attractive Indian man.
Yeah.
Well, British Indian man. I like it when we've got, you know, things in common.
Yeah.
And
there actually is a difference.
Exactly,
no.
There's a big difference.
Yeah.
If you put
another episode,
British Indian guy, so someone who's like born in England,
and then
but
a guy
Indian,
like, who just like from India.
No, I mean next to a white Caucasian British guy.
Okay, yeah, you want.
I would tend to choose the Indian.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know if that is a subconscious thing, but I just do.
But that's not racist.
That's not racist. Yeah, but then again, you know. I'm not saying never ever.
Yeah, you're not saying you'd never date a white, or you'd never find a white man attractive.
And that is the problem, is that, I'd never find that person attractive. Oh, no, definitely not.
That's what's, or the, like, this guy was, because there are people who just wouldn't date a specific race.
Mm.
Out of just choice, they wouldn't date that race, but they would sleep with them. And there are quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, especially when it comes to black men. Mm. I think there are quite a lot of white girls who would sleep with black men, but wouldn't date them.
Exactly.
And I think that that's a problem.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it, really.
Oh,
I think we're gonna
I feel like
that.
I've gone so off topic from your initial very interesting topic. But
no, but that's been, it's been fun.
Yeah, it's been good fun.
Yeah. What was this meant to be about?
What were we actually talking about?